While you're turning there, I'd like for you to do me a favor and get out your maroon hymnals and turn to number 451 and just mark that song. And just keep it marked for the lesson or open to that song. 451. Jesus is all the world to me. A while back I was with a good friend of mine on campus, and actually not on the campus, but close to it at a restaurant, and a young college lady was waiting on us. And he asked a question: could you tell me what is the purpose of life? To be quite honest, she looked clueless. And the reality is that there are a lot of people that just sort of endure life. They really have no goals at all. In the book of Ecclesiastes, first of all, in the first chapter, in verse 12 and 13, it becomes rather obvious that Solomon had somewhat soured himself on life. By the way, in our reading schedule, we've been reading through the wisdom literature. And I'm going to give you a double bonus because I had a lesson last week from that book, and again from this book again this week as we begin reading through the book of Ecclesiastes. Solomon says, first of all, in the first chapter in verse 12, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the works that are done under the sun. Indeed, all is vanity and grasping for the wind. In the second chapter, in the 17th verse, we find the same tone. He says, therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Most of us know the story. The preacher would say that obviously the reason why is because he had sought for the purpose and goal of life, the real secret to happiness, in all of the wrong places. For example, when we begin reading through the second chapter, we begin to notice that first of all, in this desperate journey of Solomon, he said, first of all, I sought for the secret of life, and what I discovered was the vanity of human wisdom. Beginning with chapter 2 in verse 12, he says, I turn myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly, for what can man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. And then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I perceive that the same event happens to them all. And so I said in my heart, as happens to the fool, so it happens to me. And why then am I more wise? Then I said in my heart, this is also vanity. The reality is that he said, the more that I became wise in worldly wisdom, it led to nothing more than just more heartache. You know, the humanists tell us that the Bible that you have in your hand is repressive. That we must save ourselves, that man must redeem himself, that he must be independent of any prayer-answering God. And the reality is that to the humanist, wisdom has become their God. Yet today we have more technology than ever. Back in 1969, I remember being glued to the TV set when we landed on the moon. And from all of that one event, today we have children running around with that little palm-held iPhone or iTouch. With the information of the world at their very hand, they can find out what the weather is like in Afghanistan or what the stock market is doing or get the latest score if you're following the World Cup or whatever it is you want to know. And yet, we are in a world that is drowning in information but starving for knowledge. That's reality. Life is empty. In the book of John, look over in John if you want to hold your place in Ecclesiastes, and look in John, the 4th chapter, and notice a statement that was made by Jesus to the Samaritan woman who was beginning to have this interview with her. And he made this observation. He says in verses 13 and 14, Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never thirst, but the water I will give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." The true secret of the world is not the worldly wisdom, but rather the wisdom that comes from God. It is drinking from the well from which one can never thirst. In the book of Job, the 28th chapter, there is a rather lengthy discourse there on godly wisdom. And in Job chapter 28, and beginning with the 12th verse in Job 28, let me find Job instead of Jeremiah. Job 28, and beginning with verse 12. Both start with a J, but I won't get it. Verse 12. He says, "But where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says it is not in me, and the sea said it is not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for jewelry and fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is far above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From whence? When does it come? Where does it come from? Where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the bird of the air. Destruction and death say, 'We have heard a report about it with our ears.' God understands the way. He knows its place. For he looks to the end of the earth and sees the whole heavens to establish a way for the wind and a portion of the waters by measure. He made a law for the rain, path for the thunderbolt. He saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it indeed. He stirred it out. And to man he said, 'Behold, the fear of the Lord is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding.'" One fellow put it like this. He said, "It is sad to know history, but not to know his story. It is sad to know the star, but not to know the bright morning star. It is sad to know the flowers, but not know the rose of Sharon. It is sad to know geology, but not to know the rock of ages." Okay, so it's not in worldly wisdom. In Ecclesiastes 2, Solomon, in his desperate journey, just said, "Well, I'll find it in wit and laughter." And again, he discovered the vanity of wit and laughter. He says in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and verses 1 and 2, "I said in my heart, 'Come now, I will test you with myrrh. Therefore enjoy pleasure.' But surely this was also vanity. I said of laughter is madness, and of myrrh, what does it accomplish?" Solomon said, "You know what, I've been too serious for too long. What I really need to do is I'll find contentment in laughter." And so what he does is he goes out and he buys up not only 101 Aggie jokes, but the sequel to the sequel to the sequel. And he buys up all the comic book books. And he says, "You know what I'll do is I'll just get all the DVDs to MASH and I'll watch every one of those episodes. And all the ones that I Love Lucy and Dick Van Dyke, you can tell I'm dated. I couldn't tell you a modern day sitcom. I don't watch it. But what he said is, I want to laugh. And I'll get clowns that will come into my home and make me laugh. And what he said is, what I found is, it's vanity and grasping for the wind." You know, there are some who like to make laughter their God. But the reality is that deep down, there is hurt and despair. Jerry Lewis said that there are three things that are real: God, human folly, and laughter. Since the first two are beyond our comprehension, we must do what we can with the third. What a sad commentary.
There are many people that simply try to find the secret to life and entertainment. And there is indeed some merit to laughter. Look over in Proverbs and you'll notice that Solomon says, for example, in the 15th chapter of Proverbs and in the 15th verse, Proverbs chapter 15 and verse 15, he says, all the days of the afflicted are evil, but he who has a merry heart has a continual feast. And in Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 22, Proverbs 17, 22, he says, a merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. It is indeed good to laugh. Nothing wrong with it. And there is certainly some psychological help there when we begin to laugh and learn to laugh. Reader's Digest calls it, now you can tell you what I'm really dated. Laughter the best medicine. But the fact is, there are some things in life that cannot be laughed away. Death, the reality of judgment. This is not the secret to life. So Solomon says, well, maybe it's in the pursuit of wine. So we go back to Ecclesiastes 2, and he says in the third verse, I search in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of my life. I'll just try to find secret in a bottle. And not only that, I'll begin to investigate that bottle. Perhaps the secret of happiness and the secret of life is all wrapped up in a bottle. Do you see the futility of that? You know, I've said many times, if we could just sort of bottle up hope, I could be a millionaire at the outlet mall. But the reality is I don't have to bottle it up. Because the secret to hope is in your lap right now. It is the book that God gave us. But surely the meaning of life is found in alcohol. And thus many a man try to drown their troubles away in a bottle. You know, we talk about cocaine and crack and pot and all those things. The number one drug problem in America is alcohol. Number one. 11 million drunkards know that the solution is not found in the bottle. And though some, well, you know, there are some predisposed. We talked about that this morning. But the reality is that there is no solution in the bottle. Well, it's a disease, alcoholism. Well, it's bonded, bottled, and sold over the counter and taxed. And you can't do that with a disease. And the reality is that alcohol causes one-third of all suicides, one-half of all homicides, and 41% of all assaults. And what does Solomon say about it? Listen to the wise man. He says, who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wound without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine, those who go in search of mixed wine, do not look upon the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. You know what causes alcoholism? Well, for an Aggie, it's got to be pretty simple. A-L-C-O-H. O-L. The first drink is what caused it. That simple. And one out of every seven that take the first drink become alcoholics. I have seen it destroy lives and families. Thus Solomon says, well, it's really not there. Surely the secret to life is in wealth. I'll just sort of go out and amass all that I can obtain. He says in verse 4, I made great works. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards, and I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants, and I had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. And so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained within me. I just sort of took inventory of all my possessions. And down in verse 11, he says it was like grasping for the wind. I just sort of took inventory of all my possessions, and what I found out is I don't even own a bit. Because the reality is that you can have all this money, but you're not going to take it with you. Nancy doesn't like to play Monopoly with me. Because I'm bad. I really am. Ask Ginger. I'm really bad. I'm telling you, if I'm fortunate enough to get the Monopoly, Nancy and Ginger say, "Dad, trade. Come on, trade. Make it fair. Make it even. Then we'll battle it out." Not me. I become money bags number one. And I begin to put those 500 on the board, one after another. And a little at a time, I build the hotels until I put them out of business. And the faster the better. You know, a lot of people think that's the secret to life. To the contrary. Solomon says, it became my vision to enjoy all of these things. It sort of reminds me of the story about the mother that had this wonderful, expensive heirloom vase. Had been passed on from a past generation. And she had this vase sitting on a coffee table in the middle of the living room. And everyone knew that when you went by that vase, you tiptoed. You didn't think about it. You didn't look at it. You didn't do anything with that heirloom vase. And one day, a little boy came flying into the living room, accidentally tripped over the coffee table, and the vase broke into 1,000 pieces, and the father said, "Son, a great thing has happened in our house today." Solomon put it like this. He said, "Whatever my eye desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all of my labor. And I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. I hated life. Although I enjoyed all of these things, I bowed before the God of Crete and Greed and the God of gold. And what I discovered is that true wealth is not in what money can buy. True wealth is something else that even death cannot take away." Jesus put it like this. In the 6th chapter of the book of Matthew, in verses 19 and 20, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says very plainly, "Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." You think happiness is found in money? You ever hear of Dennis Barnhart? Los Angeles Times, June 10, 1983. "Until the accident at 4:30 Wednesday afternoon, it had been the best days for Barnhart and the thriving young company which makes small business personal computers. Eagle netted $37 million from the initial offering of 2.75 million shares. The stock, which hit the market at $13 a share, quickly rose as high as $27 before closing at a high bid price of $15.50 a share. What happened at 4:30 on Wednesday afternoon? Barnhart took his little sports car and drove it through a barricade and into a ravine. Think money makes people happy? Solomon and Barnhart will say, no, this is not the secret to life. So where is it? Is it in wants and pleasure? Again, in the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, the 10th verse, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for I rejoiced in all my labor. I didn't keep myself from any pleasure. I mean, Hugh Hefner has nothing on Solomon. Living without the rules. Solomon says, I knew no moral restraints. 700 wives and 300 concubines. He has a harem that puts Hugh Hefner to shame. And whatever my fantasy, that was what I pursued. Excuse me, if it was a blonde, I had a blonde. If it was a brunette, I had a brunette. Whatever I wanted, this is what I had. I would hate to think about all the birthdays and anniversaries. But Solomon said it was like vanity and grasping for the wind. A fellow by the name of Hitram Sorkin, I think I said that right, Harvard University, made this observation about America. He said, the sex drive is now declared to be the most vital mainspring of human behavior. In the name of science, its fullest satisfaction is earned as necessary condition of man's health and happiness. Sex inhibitions are viewed as the main source of frustrations, mental and physical illness, and criminality. Sexual chastity is ridiculed as a prudish superstition. Sexuality of human beings is about reached its saturation point. Our civilization has now become so preoccupied with sex that it now oozes from all pores of American life. And where has it got us? Heartache. And if you really want to know where it goes, just come with Brian and some of us to Jamaica in a couple of weeks. You go down there and you plead with this little 12-year-old girl. A sweet little 12-year-old girl comes up and she hugs you and she's so pure and she's, you know, sings about God and how much she loves the Lord. And then you go back 2 years later and this 14-year-old girl has a child on her lap that she can't even support. That's where it goes. Besides the fact that it has eternal consequences. As we read this morning in Proverbs 5, the only place in which this is to be satisfied is in the context of marriage. The only place in the context of marriage. So Solomon said, I didn't find the answer there. What he found was he discovered that the worth of serving God is the only place where true contentment is found. Look over to Ecclesiastes chapter 11. And A.J. and Jessica and Emily, Jason Elizabeth and so many young people. I want you to listen to what Solomon says here. Three R's. Rejoice, remove, and remember. First of all, he says in chapter 11 and verse 9, Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 9, rejoice, O young man and youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth, and walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these, God will bring you to a judgment. Enjoy being young. That's the point. There's nothing wrong with youth. There is a sense of vibrancy there and enthusiasm. But remember that what you do, God will bring into judgment. Therefore, he says in verse 10, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your eye. For childhood and youth are vanity. But remove yourself from evil. And do what? Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While you're young, remember God. Why? Well, like we told the young lady at the restaurant up on the hill, Solomon tells us the purpose of life. He says, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. That's why God made us, to glorify and honor him. Number 451. Would you sing just one verse with me? The first verse only.
Jesus is all the world to me, my life, my joy.
I love the Lord.